Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month. This monthly CV web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching contractors how to run profitable businesses. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable contractor. Believe it or not, back in 1990, a lifetime of information was generated every 24 hours. By 1998, a lifetime of information was generated every hour, and by 2001, it was every minute. No one can keep up. Most people wake up in the morning with their first thought being, "I'm behind." Yes, it is a crazy world we live in. Learning to relax while being productive is something we all have to learn, or the pressures of this life will literally squeeze all the enjoyment out of living. This presentation will provide some practical suggestions on how to slow down and live. This month's speaker, Jeff Davidson, has devoted much of his life to becoming the work-life balance expert of our time-pressed workforce. Jeff has written numerous books, including Breathing Space, 60-Second Self-Starter, The 60-Second Organizer, Joy of Simple Living, and Complete Idiot's Guide to Managing Your Time. Jeff also travels the country presenting keynote speeches and seminars on topics like no time, no clarity, no problem, managing information and communication overload, and choosing when it's confusing. Do yourself a favor. Find a quiet spot and simply listen to Jeff's presentation. If it will make even a little more order in your day, therefore reducing your stress level a bit, it will have been worth it.
How many get up in a normal work day and the first thought of the day before you've even gotten out of bed is, "Oh, I'm behind"? I mean, has that ever happened to anyone? How many feel as if you're perpetually racing the clock, as if there's always too much to do, as if there's time pressure every place you turn? Most of us today. Now, at the same time, and please raise your hand proudly when your category is called, how many of you here have ever read a time management book? Look around, please. A stress management book. A time or stress management article. How many have been to a time or stress management lecture? So what happened? You not paying attention? What's going on? I maintain that you are all excellent at time management and that you're all pretty good at stress management. As a matter of fact, I maintain that no matter how many lectures you've attended and how many books and how many articles you've read, that you will still feel unrelenting time pressure because of the nature of our society. That any man or woman in our society today who holds a position of responsibility, who's raising children, who's in healthcare management, is going to feel time pressure unless they take certain steps. Now, a second type of question. How long, or to what age, do you suppose Pocahontas lived? Does anyone have a guess? 30. Best guess so far. 13. Toast of England by 19. Lifespan to age 21. How about F. Scott Fitzgerald? 32. I hear 44. How about Humphrey Bogart? Bogie. Guesses, please. 56. Not bad. Born in 1900, died in 1957. Excellent guess. How about Edgar Allan Poe? Let's hear it for the man. Okay. How about Edgar Allan Poe? To what age did Edgar Allan Poe live? 37, not bad. 32, 40. As it turns out, some of the most famous and prominent people in history had relatively short lives compared to what we're going to live. Alexander the Great, a man who ruled the world by age 23, only lived to what age? Somebody say 33? Correct, 33. Now, How long are you going to live? How long are you going to live? Given that you don't get hit by a truck on Michigan Avenue. Well, the actuaries, the Society of Actuaries tell us that if you're a woman and you're age 40 now, chances are you're going to live to be at least 85, at least 85. If you're a man and you're 40 now, chances are you're going to live to 40. Actually, to 80. And you might think that it's a genetic gender advantage, but actually it isn't. The lifespan difference between men and women in 1920 was only 1 year, and at different times throughout our history and in different regions, men have actually exceeded women's lifespans. So don't draw hasty conclusions. But the point is this: the longer you live, the longer you're projected to live. Now, as it turns out, all of the data that we have in terms of how long people are going to live is going to be thrown out the window in another couple of years because of the jobs that you're doing and your organizations are doing. Indeed, lifespans of 90 are going to be commonplace, 100, 110. You know this is coming. Here is the paradox of our age. What good is it to live to 110 if your days race by, if every morning you wake up and the first thought for the day is, oh, I'm behind? What good is it if you don't enjoy those 110 years? I would rather live to 75 or 80 with relative grace and ease. Wouldn't you? Or, if you want your cake and you want to eat it too, 110 with relative grace and ease. And by the way, that 110 is not a decrepit 110. That's a fruitful, active, up to at least, say, 109 and a half. To understand how we got to a situation in which all of us increasingly feel time-pressured and increasingly have trouble finding peace of mind, relaxing, we need to go back to the beginning of time. Who here is willing to go back to the beginning of time with me? Anyone? A few people on this side of the room? Okay, well, we'll just direct the rest of the presentation to this side of the room. A few people here now? Okay, all right. Well, we'll include everyone. All right, to understand how it is we got so time-pressured, we need to go back to the beginning of time. Bear with me here. Da 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 bam 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 da 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 da. I flunk music. Ba 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 ba. You all see 2001? You all see 2001: A Space Odyssey? Ladies and gentlemen, it took from the beginning of time until 1850 for world population to reach 1 billion people. Now, that's a pretty long stretch, wouldn't you say? Beginning of time to 1850. When did the second billion appear on Earth? At one point in our history, did we have 2 billion people on Earth? Guesses, please. Not all at once. Best guess so far.
1925.
Oh. Now I know why you're the head of this organization. That's pretty good. 1930. Not bad at all. 1930, 2 billion. 1960, 3 billion. 1977, 4 billion. 1987, 5 billion. Are we at 6 billion yet? Who says we're at 6 billion? Who thinks we're not there yet? 6.1 billion and counting. In other words, there has been a geometric progression in human growth, the likes of which the species has never experienced before. Nothing in our history has prepared us for a society in which there are twice as many people today as there were in 1930. In the U.S. alone, we're approaching 272 million, 100 million more than when JFK was elected president. Now, it doesn't take a great intellectual leap to understand that in a world of 6.1 billion people, where every island on Earth is being taken up Doesn't take a great leap to understand that every other system on Earth is driven by that exponential population growth. It even explains all the stuff on your desk back at home, as we shall soon see. So the first of what I call mega realities is world population. World population. Now, combine world population with what I call the second mega reality, a mega trend that's here now, if you will. The second mega reality is information and technology. In researching for my book, Breathing Space, which I wrote in 1990, I found back then that more information was generated on Earth in a 24-hour period, get ready for this, than you could take in the rest of your life, even if you're only 20 years old. Is anyone here 20? A few people. Somebody hoping that they're 20 again back there? In other words, in 1990, a lifetime of information was generated every 24 hours. But in 1998, guess what? A lifetime of information is generated every hour. Every hour. But by 2001, a lifetime of information will be generated every minute. And you can't keep up? Nobody is keeping up. Stop taking it personally. No one is keeping up. In the United States alone, there are 155,000 books published a year. Now that breaks down to, for you math buffs, 3,000 a week per workday, 600 a day. Even if you work a 10-hour day, that's 60 books an hour. Even if 10% of them are in healthcare, management, leadership, and so forth, that's 6 new books an hour. That alone tells you that you can't keep up. Now throw in the journals and everything that's on the internet and everything that competitor organizations are doing and all their literature. And you would spend every waking minute of your existence just trying to keep pace with all of the literature that is germane to your field, let alone never do your job, let alone never manage anyone else. So it becomes physically impossible to keep pace. Information abounds in our society. Absolutely abounds. One futurist went so far as to say, in terms of information technology, technology breakthroughs, that in North America today, if you can believe this, and I can almost fall off the table when I recount these numbers, but I won't, that in North America today, there's one technological breakthrough every 17 seconds. Every 17 seconds. But by 2001, it will be 17 a second. In an era, in a society with so much information, with so many breakthroughs, nobody has a lock on the future. No president of the United States, no president or head of any other nation, no CEO, no Nobel laureate, no head of a world religion, no association executive, no one. And in that respect, we're all in the same boat. And in that respect, it's okay to kick off your shoes a little now and then, because you're not doing so bad. You're in a society which abounds with information, which abounds with change. My guess is you're doing pretty well. And probably you're doing spectacularly well compared to a lot of people in other careers. So, the second mega reality I want you to put in your intellectual bonnet is information which flows in abundance. First mega reality, population. Second, information. Third is media growth. Media growth. Now, tell me who I am.
And that's the way it is. Tuesday, March 4th, 1962.
No, I'm Jeff Davidson doing Walter Cronkite. But I'll accept Walter Cronkite. Good. You see, we all grew up in a society that said it was moral, it was civic, it was patriotic to keep abreast of current events. Didn't we all have current events as a class or a section of our schooling? Didn't we all have teachers that said it was important to keep pace. Well, I'm here today to tell you that you cannot keep pace. That there is more news on earth than anyone can fathom. That in fact, most of what passes for news is not news at all. It's what's wrong with society. There is a saying in the media that they don't want you to know that dictates what makes the evening news. Are you ready for this? I'm going to give you the first half. Please, give me the second half. If it bleeds, it leads. And so they titillate us with sensational footage, dramatic footage, most of which has no impact on our lives on a daily basis. You rarely see a news headline that says 500,000 couples went to bed happy in Chicago last night. I've never seen one myself. So news by its nature tends to be negative, but it draws a lot of our time and attention, an awful lot of our time and attention. All right, so I want you to put in your intellectual bonnet now the third mega reality, which is media growth all around us. As a matter of fact, we're wired. We're in a nation where everyone's got a television. At least, how many have at least one television in your household? At least one. Come on, everyone up. All right, how many have at least two? How many have at least three? Whoa! How many have one in your bathroom? I didn't want to know. That was just a joke. I did not want to know. Well, do you know, we have, on average, 5 radios per household in America, and that's not counting car radios. So we're tuned in, we're wired, we're getting news and information in a world that's globally linked with 6.1 billion people. Are you beginning to see how, regardless of what field you're in, even though healthcare management is a challenging field, and you're right in the middle of a revolution, and it's a pretty pickle, but regardless of that, are you starting to see that simply being born into this society at this time all but guarantees you're going to have challenges on the way to achieving relaxation, peace of mind? That it's not your fault. It's simply what is. It's being born in the 50s or 60s or 70s or for some the 40s and the 30s. And once you understand that, the skies begin to open. And there are ways to claim your day and your hour and your moment. We'll get to those shortly. All right, so the fourth mega reality, moving along, independent of information per se, the fourth mega reality is paper. Paper, paper everywhere, but not a thought to think. I paraphrase that, that's true. For some of you, your credo has become, I photocopy, therefore I am. For others, it's I fax, therefore I am. And despite the advent of email and intranets and the internet, paper continues to grow with reckless abandon in America. The typical executive in America encounters more than 200 pieces of direct mail, commonly known as junk, per month. The typical family gets more than 200 catalogs per year, usually between September and December 24th. Most of the time they invited it themselves. They dropped their business card in the chamber punch bowl. They signed up for something. They didn't protect themselves and say, don't put me on the mailing list. So all around us, paper abounds. Paper independent of information per se. Now, quick review. What is the first mega reality competing for our time and attention in its way? Population. Second mega reality, information. Third, all around us, media growth. Fourth, there's way too much of this paper. Brings us to the last of what I call the mega realities, and that is choices. Do you know that the more choices you have, the harder it is to choose? Alvin Toffler told us this in 1969 in his book Future Shock. I'll prove it to you. I want you to think back. And please, raise your hand proudly when your category is called. Who here is single or used to be single?
Yeah.
pretty much everyone in the room. I was hoping for 100% response on that one, but I'll go with what we got. Whether you're single or you used to be single, think about this. The larger the metro area in which you live, very often you'll hear people saying, it's harder to meet people. New York, Chicago, Los Angeles. Sometimes the mid-level population communities are better places to meet. Because the more choices you have, all things being equal, the harder it is to choose. So as often as possible, I say, you want to have just a few choices each day, the ones that count. If a coworker asks you, where do you want to go to lunch? I say that your response ought to be hereafter, you decide. Because of all the lunches you've ever had, I'll bet you can't recall 10. And even if you went to a bad restaurant and had a bad dish and had a bad reaction, in the grand scope of things, it didn't make that much of a difference in your life. So, we've got the five mega realities: population, information, media growth, paper, and choices, and there's way too many choices, all of which conspire to make us feel as if we are perpetually racing the clock, independent of how far we drive to work, whether our boss is a tough son of a gun or not, the size of our mortgage, how well we're getting along with our spouse or significant other. All the factors that personally are important, absolutely, they have their impact. But they pale by comparison to the mega realities of our times. They pale by comparison. Now, some people's response in terms of everything that comes their way is to try to talk faster, walk faster, eat faster, sleep less. Do you know anybody like that? Is there anybody like that in your seat right now? I almost blew that joke. All right. Is there anyone you know like that? Yes, increasingly we find ourselves speeding up. But you work with doctors all the time and you know that human physiology has been in formation for tens of thousands of years. And when you try to walk faster, talk faster, speak faster, sleep less, it doesn't work. It works in the short run, but there are long-run dramatic effects. By contrast, think of some of the great people in history. Were they, to a man and woman, were they in a hurry? Yes, they had some things that they urgently wanted to accomplish, but did they walk faster, talk faster, sleep less, eat faster? No, they marshaled the resources that they needed in order to be successful. Think about the most successful people in your own organization. Think about the people that no matter how frenzied the place gets, they continue to be resilient. Do they walk faster, talk faster, eat faster, sleep less? Well, they may sleep less, we don't know. But I'll bet they don't do the other three. It's so important for all of us to recognize that to be our best, very often, we have to return to some of the basics that people have been returning to since time began. I read a book once called Dead Men Do Tell Tales by Dr. William Maples, a forensic anthropologist. He's often called in to determine the cause of death when it wasn't abundantly clear, especially in high-profile cases. Dr. Maples is often asked to determine whether or not someone committed suicide because it's not always apparent. And in viewing a lot of suicide scenarios, he came to a startling conclusion. Whether the person was a high-powered executive, a high-powered healthcare executive, or someone who was a relative hermit in society, during their last few hours before they took their own life, they exhibited the same type of behavior. They went to some quiet place, a meadow, a field, a pasture, away from the rabble, away from the noise, so that whether they had been a hermit or not in life, for their last hour or two, they lived like a hermit in quiet contemplation before taking their life. And I think to myself, what would their life have been like if they were able to have quiet contemplation along the way, as opposed to just reserving the last 3 hours. Food for thought, huh? So, what can we do, given that we're in a society, in a world where just by virtue of being alive and holding a responsible position, we know we're going to feel time pressured? How do we find peace of mind? How do we relax at high speed as it is? Here are a couple ideas. First, I want you to embrace the notion of managing the beforehand. MTB, I call it. MTB. Managing beforehand means that as often as possible, especially in anticipation of an event, you take care of as many things as you possibly can. Why? So that as the event approaches, you are at your best. You have as few things to do as you possibly can. Now, one of the best examples, I've given almost 500 speeches now, one of the best examples of managing beforehand is right here, Arthur Neal. Took care of so many things in advance that as a speaker, it was easy. You've given me breathing space, I'm going to give you breathing space. Pass that down, please. It's okay to applaud. Now, how do you apply managing beforehand in your own lives and your own careers? A simple example. We don't have oodles of time right here, but in my session 79A and B, I'll get into this in abundance. One example of managing them beforehand is if you take home work from the office, and I guess a few people here do it on occasion, that at least you assemble the night before by the front door the work that you brought home. Get your briefcase by the front door. Why? So that the next morning, all you have to do is get your body out the door instead of rounding things up. You want to have as much as close to the door as possible. If you have a household full of kids, you get as much of their stuff to the front door as close as possible. If you live in an area where crime is not a problem, in other words, you could actually put your briefcase in your car the night before, then go ahead and do it. Why? Managing the beforehand. Another technique that I like to use on a frequent basis is what I call conditioning your environment. Conditioning your environment. All right, you're all in healthcare management, so I assume that you all belong to gyms and health clubs. Okay, bad assumption. All right. For those who belong to a gym and health club, if they offer you a locker and they want another $60 or $80 a year, what do I say? Get it. Why? Why? People way back in the back tables who thought I would never call on them. Why do you get that gym locker? Absolutely. In other words, 100% of the time you go to the gym, your sneakers are there. One less thing to worry about. Conditioning your environment. How many wear contact lenses? I do. Do you have one little set of tubs in your life? In case you need to change your lenses? No. Tubs are a commodity. They cost next to nothing. They're available everywhere. So you have one in your gym locker. You have one in your desk. You have one in the glove compartment of your car. And so it is in all other aspects of your life. Condition your environment for the way you work and live. One less thing to worry about. A way to relax at high speed because you know this stuff is already there. Why? Because you always keep it there. Moving on. Another technique is to clear your desks. Now, for some of you, this is real news. I want you to know that before today's session, I actually went around to all of your desks back home. I did. I used Santa's sleigh. And some of you need remedial desk help. Remedial. How many saw the movie Top Gun? Show of hands, please. Why'd you see that movie? No, I saw it too. Now, Top Gun, remember, Tom Cruise is flying the friendly skies. And when an aircraft carrier, a plane is coming onto an aircraft carrier deck, the term all hands on deck traditionally meant that even a senior officer picked up a push broom
Now they have vacuums and blowers and so forth. But the point is that they want to make that deck as clean and clear as humanly possible. Why? To increase the probability of a successful landing. What would happen if there was debris on the deck, or plane number one was still on the deck as a second plane was coming in? What would happen to that second plane? Increased probability of crashing and burning, literally. Increased probability. Your desks, ladies and gentlemen of the Congress, your desks are like aircraft carrier decks. And if you take that next pile that comes in and say, I'm just going to park it here on the corner and hope the organizing fairy comes by and does something with it, good luck, because nobody's coming. You've got to keep the spaces of your life clear. So for some of you, the assignment is to go back after the Congress, clear your desks completely, and start again as if it was the first day. Yeah. All right. Another suggestion is to pare down. I have a simple formula for having less paper in your life. Would anybody on this side of the room be interested? A few. Okay. I know this side will be interested, so I didn't have to ask. All right. To have less paper in your life, here's the formula. Get out your number two lead pencil. No looking on anybody else's paper. Here's the formula. Throw away one less... Keep the formula straight, Jeff. Throw away one more piece of paper each day than you take in. Let me say that again, because I know that was involved. Throw away one more piece of paper each day than you take in. You've got to pare down. You've got to play as if more is coming. Why? Because we know more is coming. We know we're in a society today where simply being alive all but guarantees you'll be deluged with paper. Doesn't take anything. And so I want you to keep 20% of your drawers clear. 20% clear. 20% of everything clear. I want you to keep your desktop as clear as possible. The top of your filing cabinet. The top of your window sills, if they're thick enough to house books and things. And the corners of your room. I want you to pick up all that stuff too. Because all those piles represent postponed decision making. All right, a couple more things. Eat as healthy as you can. And if you can't eat healthy, take a multiple vitamin. It makes a big difference. You can't be at your best when you're dragging your derriere. You just can't. One night a week, I want you to take nothing home. And that's a big challenge for some here. One night a week, I want you to take nothing home. If it's hard for you to do this, then think of this. Start on Tuesday, coach everyone in your office, and soon enough they'll support you in that quest. Finally, I want you to get the sleep that you need. Stanford University did a study recently that said the typical adult in America no longer has any idea what it's like to be fully awake and alert. I catch anybody? You need 8 hours or seven or whatever it is. And if you've been jipping yourself on sleep perpetually, it's got to show up somewhere sometime. So please make sleep your hobby for the month of March. Now I'm going to leave you with a poem. Please, if you will, help me with the very last line if you think that you know what the end of the poem says. The poem is about the importance of doing one thing at a time. I belong to a health club in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And the last time I went there, there was a woman. It could have just as easily been a man, but it was a woman. She got on the stair climber. You all know the stair climber? And she put on a Walkman. Okay, so far I've seen that before, so have you. Now, this is the part that throws me. She also pulls out a book. Puts it on that little ledge. I almost said to her, "Would you like some gum?" As often as possible, I want you to do one thing at a time. Not an easy message to deliver to contemporary America, where you've been trained from birth to do multiple things. But when you're giving your attention to just one thing at a time, guess what? You do your best work. Here's the poem. A fairly young man from Chapel Hill spoke to thousands who had had their fill of frenzied days and restless nights, whose quest for breathing space was now in sight. Said the man from Chapel Hill, "Most of your days will be sublime if you'll practice the art of doing one thing at a time." You've been a wonderful audience. May you all have breathing space.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. The vision of Grandian Associates is quite simple. We teach contractors how to run profitable business. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandiassociates.com or give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.